advance. The orders are clear, the other man said, barely out of his teens himself. Bright Lord Shalaire says we're to hold here. No retreat. To damnation with that man, the squad leader said, wiping his sweaty hair, surrounded by jets of exhaustion spren. Kaladin immediately felt a kinship with the poor fool. Given impossible orders and not enough resources? Looking along the ragged battle line, Kaladin guessed the man was in over his head with all the higher-ranked soldiers dead. There were barely enough men to form three squads, and half of those were wounded. This is Amaram's fault, Kaladin said, playing with the lives of half-trained men and outdated equipment, all to make himself look good so he'll get moved to the Shattered Plains. The young squad leader glanced at Kaladin, frowning. You shouldn't talk like that, kid, the man said, running his hand through his hair again. It could get you strung up if the High Marshal hears. The man took a deep breath. Form up the wounded men on that flank. Tell everyone to get ready to hold. And you, messenger boy, grab your friend and get some spears. Gore, put them in front. In front? The other man asked. You're certain, Varth? You work with what you have, the man said, hiking back the way he had come. Work with what you have. Everything spun around Kaladin, and he suddenly remembered this exact battlefield. He knew where he was. He knew that squad leader's face. How had he not seen it immediately? Kaladin had been here, rushing through the lines, searching for... He spun on his heel and found a young man, too young, approaching Varth. He had an open, inviting face and too much spring in his step as he approached the squad leader. I'll go with them, sir, Tien said. Fine. Go. Tien picked up a spear. He gathered the other messenger boy from the tent and started toward the place where he'd been told to stand. No, Tien, Kaladin said. I can't watch this. Not again. Tien came and took Kaladin's hand, then walked him forward. It's all right, he said. I know you're frightened, but here we can stand together, all of us. Three are stronger than one, right? He held out his spear, and the other boy, who was crying, did the same. Tien, Kaladin said. Why did you do it? You should have stayed safe. Tien turned to him, then smiled. They would have been alone. They needed someone to help them feel brave. They were slaughtered, Kaladin said. So were you. So it was good someone was there, to help them not feel so alone as it happened. You were terrified. I saw your eyes. Of course I was. Tien looked at him as the charge began and the enemy advanced up the hillside. Who wouldn't be afraid? Doesn't change that I needed to be here. For them. Kaladin remembered getting stabbed on this battlefield, killing a man, then being forced to watch Tien die. He cringed, anticipating that death. But all went dark. The forest, the tent, the figures all vanished. Except for Tien. Kaladin fell to his knees. Then Tien, poor little Tien, wrapped his arms around Kaladin and held him. It's all right, he whispered. I'm here to help you feel brave. I'm not the child, you see, Kaladin whispered. I know who you are, Cal. Kaladin looked up at his brother, who somehow, in that moment, was full grown, and Kaladin was a child clinging to him, holding to him as the tears started to fall, as he let himself weep at Teft's death. This is wrong, Kaladin said. I'm supposed to hold you, protect you. And you did, as I helped you. He pulled Kaladin tight. Why do we fight, Cal? Why do we keep going? I don't know, Kaladin whispered. I've forgotten. It's so we can be with each other. They all die, Tien. Everyone dies. So they do, don't they?
That means it doesn't matter,
Kaladin said.
None of it matters.
See, that's the wrong way of looking at it. Tien held him tighter. Since we all go to the same place in the end, the moments we spend with each other are the only things that do matter. The times we helped each other. Kaladin trembled. Look at it, Cal, Tien said softly. See the colors. If you think letting Teft die is a failure, but all the times you supported him are meaningless, then no wonder it always hurts. Instead, if you think of how lucky you both were to be able to help each other when you were together, well, it looks a lot nicer, doesn't it?
I'm not strong enough,
Kaladin whispered. You're strong enough for me.
I'm not good enough.
You're good enough for me.
I wasn't there.
Tien smiled. You are here for me, Cal. You're here for all of us.
And,
Kaladin said, tears on his cheeks,
if I fail again...
You can't, so long as you understand. He pulled Kaladin tight. Kaladin rested his head against Tien's chest, blotting his tears with the cloth of his shirt. Teft believes in you. The enemy thinks he's won. But I want to see his face when he realizes the truth. Don't you? It's going to be delightful. Kaladin found himself smiling. If he kills us, Tien said, he simply dropped us off at a place we were going anyway. We shouldn't hasten it, and it is sad. But see, he can't take our moments, our connection, Kaladin. And those are things that really matter. Kaladin closed his eyes, letting himself enjoy this moment. Is it real? He finally asked. Are you real? Or is this something made by the Stormfather, or Wit, or someone else? Tien smiled, then pressed something into Kaladin's hand. A small wooden horse. Try to keep track of him this time, Cal. I worked hard on that. Then Kaladin dropped suddenly, the wooden horse evaporating in his hand as he fell. He searched around in the endless blackness.
Syl?
He called. A pinprick of light weaving around him, but that wasn't her.
Syl!
Another pinprick, and another, but those weren't her. That was. He reached into the darkness and seized her hand, pulling her to him. She grabbed him, physical in this place and his own size. She held to him and shook as she spoke.
I've forgotten the words. I'm supposed to help you, but I can't. I...
You are helping, Kaladin said, by being here. He closed his eyes, feeling the storm as they broke through the moment between and entered the real world. Besides, he whispered, I know the words. Say them, Tien whispered. I have always known these words. Say it, lad. Do it.
I accept it, Stormfather. I accept that there will be those I cannot protect.
The storm rumbled, and he felt warmth surrounding him, light infusing him. He heard Syl gasp, and a familiar voice, not the Stormfather's. These words are accepted. We couldn't save Teft, Syl, Kaladin whispered. We couldn't save Tien. But we can save my father. And when he opened his eyes, the sky exploded with 1,000 pure lights.
109. Emulsifier. For ones so tarnished, they are somehow bright.
Musings of L on the first of the final 10 days.
Leshwe fell to her knees before Venli, not flying, not hovering, on her knees. Venli knelt as well, as Leshwe still held to her face, but the grip softened. A cool, beautiful light flooded in through the window behind, like a frozen lightning bolt, brighter than any sphere, bright as the sun.
"What have you done, Venli?" Leshwe said. "What have you done?"
I swore the first ideal of the Radiance, Venli said. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Leshwe said.
A joy spren burst around her, beautiful, like a blue storm.
Sorry? Venli, they've come back to us. They've forgiven us.
What?
Please.
Leshwe said to Longing.
Ask your spren. Do they know of an honor spren named Raya? She was my friend once, precious to me.
Leshwe had friends among the spren?
Storms.
Leshwe had lived before the war, when men and singers had been allies. Honor had been the god of the dawn singers. Timber pulsed.
She doesn't know Raya, Venli said. But she doesn't know a lot of honor, spren. She doesn't think any of the old ones survived the human betrayal.
Leshwe nodded, humming softly to one of the old rhythms.
My spren, though, Venli said. She has friends who are willing to maybe try again with us.
My soul is too long owned by someone else for that, Leshwe said.
Venli glanced toward the fighting. The sudden light hadn't halted them. If anything, it had made the pursuers' soldiers more determined as they attacked. They seemed to enjoy the company of the anger spren and pain spren. Some of the humans had wrestled away weapons, but most of them fought unarmed, trying desperately to keep the Radiance safe.
I don't know what to do, Venli whispered. I keep wavering between two worlds. I'm too weak, mistress.
Leshwe rose into the air, then ripped her side sword from its sheath.
It's all right, voice. I know the answer.
She flew directly into the fight and began pulling away the soldiers, shouting for them to halt. When they didn't, Leshwe started swinging, and in seconds her troops had joined her as singer fought singer.
Sibling, Navani whispered, clinging to the pillar. What is happening? Why do you make that rhythm? Navani?
The voice that responded was soft as a baby's breath on her skin, almost imperceptible.
I hear this rhythm. I hear it in the darkness. Why? Where is it coming from? There.
Navani was given an impression, a vision that overlaid her senses. A place in the tower, the atrium. Dark from a storm blowing outside? Down here, deep within the basement, she hadn't realized one was going on. Fighting. People were fighting, struggling, dying. Navani squinted at the vision. Her pain was fading, though a part of her felt that was a bad sign. But she could see. A fused. Flying a foot off the ground. Fighting beside someone infused with void light. A regal? And those were humans with them. Standing together, side by side.
What are they doing? Navani asked. Fighting other singers, I think. It's so dark. Why do they fight each other? What's in that room they defend? Navani whispered. That is where they put the fallen radiance. Emulsifier, Navani whispered. What? A joined purpose. Humans and singers. Honor and odium. They're fighting to protect the helpless, sibling. The vision faded, but before it did, Navani spotted Relaine, the singer who worked with Bridge 4. He's there, Navani said, then found herself coughing. Each convulsion made the pain flare up again. Sibling, he's there. Too far, they whispered. Too late. Outside in the hallway, Moash hacked at Raboniel's left arm, making it fall limp. She clawed at him with her remaining arm, hissing, as the hand with the dagger dropped its weapon and dangled uselessly. Take me, Navani whispered to the sibling. Bond me. No, the sibling said, voice faint. Why? You aren't worthy, Navani.
Relaine heard the shouting long before they reached the atrium. The guards holding him attuned anxiety and hurried him and Dabit faster, though Relaine remained optimistic. That noise had to be from Kaladin's fight with the pursuer. Relaine was, therefore, utterly shocked when they walked into the atrium to find a full-on civil war. Singers fought against singers, and a group of humans stood side by side with one of the forces. Relaine's guards went running, perhaps to find some kind of authority figure to sort out this nonsense, leaving him and Dabit. But the fray ended quickly, and the side with the humans won. Few of the singers seemed to want to fight fused, and so the troops fled, leaving the dead behind them.
What? Dabit asked softly, the two of them hanging back in one of the side corridors where some human civilians, brave enough to watch but not skilled enough to join, clustered.
Relaine made a quick assessment, then attuned the rhythm of hope. 5 of the heavenly ones and about 20 regals under their command had turned upon the soldiers of the pursuer. The other heavenly ones seemed to have refused to join either side and had retreated up higher into the atrium. That was Leshwi hovering near the front of the side that had won, holding a sword coated in orange singer blood. She seemed to be in charge. A good number of people, both human and singer, were down and bleeding. It was a mess.
They need field surgeons, Relaine said. Come on.
He and Dabit raced in and, as Kaladin had trained them, started a quick triage. People began helping, and in minutes Relaine had them all binding wounds for both singers and humans, regardless of which side they'd fought on. Liren had supplies in the infirmary, fortunately, and when Dabit returned with them, he brought Hasina, who seemed rattled by the fighting. It was a few minutes before Relaine got an explanation. Liren had been taken, Kaladin had given chase. Relaine attuned the lost. No wonder Hasina looked like she'd been through a storm. Still, she seemed eager to have something to do and took over leading the triage. That let Relaine step away for a breather and wipe his hands. Some humans who had seen it all gave him scattered explanations. The pursuer had ordered the slaughter of helpless Radiance, and both humans and singers had resisted his army. Before Relaine could go demand answers from Venley, several gruff human men approached him. He recognized them from the sessions Kaladin had been doing, helping them with trauma. They'd been forced to pick up weapons again, the poor Kremlings.
Yes? Relaine asked.
They led him to a body placed reverently beside the wall, the eyes burned out. Teft. Relaine fell to his knees as Dabit joined him, letting out a quiet whimper, anguish spren surrounding them. They knelt together, heads bowed. Relaine sang the Song of the Fallen, a song for a dead hero. It seemed the plan hadn't gone off too well for them, either.
Lift? He asked.
She's in the infirmary, Dabit whispered. Unconscious. Legs dead from a blade. Looks like someone hit her hard on the head. She is bleeding. I tried to give her stormlight. Nothing happened.
Relaine attuned mourning. Lift could heal others, but, like with Kaladin and Teft, her internal healing wasn't working. So much for waking the Radiance. He bowed his head for Teft, then left him there. Let the dead rest. It was their way, and he wished to be able to give the man a proper sky burial. Teft had been a good person, one of the best. Behind him, other matters drew Relaine's attention. The humans and singers were already squabbling.
You need to submit, Leshwe was saying, hovering above them in her imperious, fused way. I will explain to Roboniel that the soldiers were uncontrolled and didn't obey my orders.
And you think she'll let us walk? One of the human women shouted. We need to get out of here right now.
If I let you go, Leshwe said, it will seem that I am in rebellion. We can contain this if you submit.
You're not in rebellion? One of the men demanded. What was that, then? We ain't obeying one of you again, another bellowed. Ever!
Shouts from both sides rose as singers ordered the people not to argue with one of the fused. Relaine turned from one group to the other, then attuned determination and wiped the makeup from his tattoo. He strode out between the groups. Field medicine wasn't the only thing Bridge 4 had taught.
Listen up, he shouted to Confidence. All of you!
Remarkably, they fell silent. Relaine did his best Teft impersonation as he turned to the humans.
You all know me. I'm Bridge 4. I know you don't like me, but are you willing to trust me?
The humans grumbled, but most of them nodded, prompted by Norrell. Relaine turned toward the singers.
You all, he barked to Confidence, absolutely committed treason. You acted against Odium's wishes, and he will seek retribution for that. You're as good as dead. And you fused? You're in for an eternity of torture. Fortunately, you have two people here who can guide you. Listeners from a people who escaped his control. So if you want to survive, you're going to listen to me.
Leshwe folded her arms, but then muttered, Fine. The other heavenly ones seemed willing to follow her lead. Venli rushed over, and she was infused with the deep violet light of void light, far more so than an ordinary regal. She glowed more, in fact, than a fused.
What are you? Relaine demanded.
A radiant, she said to Consolation. Kind of. I can use void light to power my abilities so they work in the tower.
Figures, Relaine grumbled. Collects breath. I wait years, then you, of all people, grab a spren first.
Maybe that was too much, Teft.
Anyway, it explains how you got lift out. We need to get moving. Odium won't stand for a rebellion among his own. So you singers are going to come with us. We're going to grab the Radiance and we're going to carry them out onto the plateau, where we'll escape via the Oath Gates to the Shattered Plains.
That puts us in the humans' power, Leshwe said.
I'll get you out of it, Relaine said. After we're all safe. Understood? Gather up our wounded, grab those radiants, and let's get going. Before Raboniel knows there was a rebellion, I want all involved parties, human and singer, out of this tower. Go!
They started moving, trusting that he knew what he was saying, which he wasn't certain he did. Transporting a bunch of unconscious people would be slow, and there was a high storm outside.
Relaine, Venli said to Awe. You gave orders to a fused.
He shrugged.
It's all about an air of authority.
It's more than that, she said. How?
I had good teachers,
Relaine said, though he was a little surprised himself. He was a spy, used to staying back, letting others lead while he watched. Today, though, there hadn't been anyone else. And having been rejected by both sides, he figured he was an outsider, and therefore as close to a neutral party as there could be in this conflict. Everyone worked together to move the unconscious Radiance and the wounded. Even Leshwe and the five other heavenly ones each carried a wounded soldier. Relaine spent the time checking the balconies up above. The dozens of heavenly ones who hadn't joined the battle had now vanished, carrying word to Raboniel, undoubtedly, or marshalling their personal forces to stop this rebellion. Once everyone was together, Relaine waved for them to follow as he started the hike out. Venli hurried up beside him.
"How are we going to work the Oath Gate?" she whispered.
"I know the mechanism," Relaine said. "I assume we can use your blade to figure it out."
Venli hurried at his side as they entered a corridor.
"My blade?"
"You told me you cut Lift out of her cell with a shard blade. I wondered why they let you have one instead of giving it to a fused, but now I can piece it together. Yours is a living, radiant blade, which can work the Oath Gates. I guess your void light lets you summon it?"
Venli hummed to anxiety.
"I don't have a blade, Relaine."
"But
I was lying. I used my powers to get her out. Timber says I'm a long way from earning my own blade."
"Damnation."
"We'll figure something out," he said. "Right now, we need to keep moving."
110. Reborn.
Radiant.
Musings of El on the first of the final 10 days. A black storm, black wind, black rain. Then, piercing the blackness like a spear, a lance of light. Caladan Stormblessed. Reborn. Caladan exploded through the darkness, surrounded by a 1,000 joyful windspren, swirling like a vortex.
"Go!"
he shouted.
"Find him!"
Though it felt like he'd been falling for hours, he had spent most of that time in the place between moments. If he was still falling through the sky, mere seconds had passed and his father was falling somewhere below him, still alive. Caladan pointed downward, reaching out, preparing himself as hundreds of windspren met the storm and blew it back, creating an open path, a tunnel of light leading toward a single figure tumbling in the air, distant. Still alive. Caladan's lashings piled atop one another as Syl spun around him, laughing. Storms, how he'd missed her laughter. With his hand outstretched, Caladan watched as a windspren slammed into it and flashed, outlining his hand with a glowing transparent gauntlet. A dozen others slammed into him, joyful, exultant. Lines of light exploded around him as the spren transformed, being pulled into this realm and choosing to connect to him. He watched that tiny tumbling figure as it drew closer and closer, the ground so near. They'd fallen the length of the tower and hundreds of feet below it in the storms. The ground rose up to meet them. Almost. Almost. Caladan stretched out his hand and...
"Not worthy." The words echoed against Navani's soul, and for the moment she forgot Moash. She forgot the tower. She was someplace else. "Not good enough. Not a scholar. Not a creator. You have no fame, accomplishment, or capacity of your own. Everything that is distinctive about you came from someone else." "Lies," she whispered. And they were. They truly were. She pressed her hand to the pillar. "Take me as your bondsmith. I am worthy, sibling. I say the words. Life before death." "No," so soft. "We are too different. You capture Spren." "Who better to work together than two who believe differently?" she said. "Strength before weakness. We can compromise. Isn't that the soul of building bonds? Of uniting?" Moash kicked Raboniel away, and she hit the wall, limp as a doll. "We can find the answers," Navani said, blood dribbling from her lips. "Together."
"You just want to live."
"Don't you?" The sibling's voice grew too soft to hear.
Moash looked down the hallway toward Navani. So she closed her eyes and tried to hum. She tried to find Stormlight's tone, pure and vibrant, but she faltered. Navani couldn't hear that tone, not right now, not with everything falling apart, not with her life seeping away. She found herself humming a different tone instead, the one Raboniel had always given her, with its chaotic rhythm. Yes, this close to death, Navani could only hear that. His tone, eager to claim her. The sibling whimpered. And Navani inverted the tone. All it took was intent. Odium gave her the song, but she twisted it back upon him. She hummed the song of anti-voidlight, her hand pressed to the pillar. Navani, the sibling said, voice growing stronger. The darkness retreats ever so slightly. What are you doing? I created this for you, Navani said. I tried to... Navani, the sibling said. Navani, it's not enough. The song isn't loud enough. It seems to be hurting that man, though. He has frozen in place. Navani? Her voice faltered. Her bloody hand slipped down to her side, leaving marks on the pillar. I can hear my mother's tone, the sibling said, but not my tone. I think it's because my father is dead. Honor, Navani whispered. Honor is not dead. He lives inside the hearts of his children. Does he? Truly? It seemed a plea, not a challenge. Does he? Navani searched deep. Was what she'd been doing honorable? Creating Fabrials? Imprisoning Spren? Could she really say that? Odium's tone rang in her ears, though she'd stopped humming its inverse. Then, a pure song, rising up from within her, orderly, powerful. Had she done harm without realizing it? Possibly. Had she made mistakes? Certainly. But she'd been trying to help. That was her journey, a journey to discover, learn, and make the world better. Honor's song welled up inside her, and she sang it. The pillar began to vibrate as the sibling sang Cultivation's song, the pure sound of lifelight. The sound began to shift, and Navani modulated her tone, inching it closer and closer to. The two snapped into harmony, the boundless energy of cultivation always growing and changing, and the calm solidity of honor, organized, structured. They vibrated together, structure and nature, knowledge and wonder, mixing, the song of science itself. That is it, the sibling whispered to the rhythm of the tower. My song. Our emulsifier, Navani whispered to the rhythm of the tower. The common ground, the sibling said, between humans and Spren. That is why I was created so long ago. A rough hand grabbed Navani and spun her around, then pressed her against the pillar. Moash raised his blade. Navani, the sibling said. I accept your words. Power flooded Navani, infused her, making her pain evaporate like water on a hot plate. Together, she and the sibling created light. The energy surged through her so fully, she felt it bursting from her eyes and mouth as she looked up at Moash and spoke. Journey before destination, you bastard!
Lirin hung in the air, his eyes squeezed closed, trembling. He remembered falling and the awful tempest, darkness. It had all vanished. Something had yanked on his arm, slowing him carefully enough to not rip his arm off, but jarringly enough that it ached. Stillness. In a storm. Was he dead? He opened his eyes and searched upward to find a column of radiant light stretching hundreds of feet in the air, holding back the storm. Wind spread? Thousands upon thousands of them. Liren dangled from the gauntleted fist of a shard-bearer in resplendent shard-plate, armor that seemed alive as it glowed a vibrant blue at the seams, bridge four glyphs emblazoned across the chest. A flying shard-bearer. Storms. It was him. Kaladin proved it by rotating so that they were right side up, then hoisting Liren into a tight embrace. Remarkably, as Liren touched the plate, he couldn't feel it. It became completely transparent, barely visible, in fact, as a faint outline around Kaladin. "I'm sorry, Father," Kaladin said.
"Sorry? For what?"
"I thought your way might be correct," Kaladin said, "and that I'd been wrong. But I don't think it's that simple. I think we're both correct. For us."
"I think perhaps I can accept that," Liren said.
Kaladin leaned back, still holding him as they dangled barely 20 feet above the rocks. Storms. Was that how close they'd come?
"Cutting it a little tight, don't you think, son?
A surgeon must be timely and precise."
"This is timely," Liren said.
"Well, you do hate it when people waste time," Kaladin said, grinning. Then he paused, letting go of Liren with one arm, which was somewhat disconcerting, though Liren now seemed to be floating on his own. Kaladin touched Liren's forehead with fingers that felt normal despite being faintly outlined by the gauntlet. "What is this?" Kaladin asked. Liren remembered, with some embarrassment, what he'd finally let that one-armed fool Norrell do to him, a painted shash glyph on Liren's forehead.
"I figured," Liren said, "that if an entire tower was going to show faith in my son, I could maybe try to do the same. I'm sorry, son, for my part."
He reached up and brushed aside Kaladin's hair to see the brand there. But as he did, he found scabs flaking away, the brands falling off to the stones below like a shell outgrown, discarded. Clean, smooth skin was left behind. Kaladin reached to his forehead in shock. He prodded at the skin as if amazed. Then he laughed, grabbing Liren in a tighter embrace.
"Careful, son," Liren said. "I'm not a radiant. We mortals break."
"Radiants break too," Kaladin whispered. "But then, fortunately, we fill the cracks with something stronger. Come on. We need to protect the people in that tower. You in your way, me in mine." 111. Unchained.
"And so I am not at all dissatisfied with recent events."
Musings of El on the first of the final 10 days. Dalinar returned from the Stormfather's vision and found himself still flying with the Windrunners, face mask in place, wrapped in several layers of protective clothing. He felt clunky and slow after being the winds moments ago, but he reveled in what he'd heard and felt, what he'd said. "These words are accepted." Whatever was happening in Urithiru, Kaladin would face it standing up straight. God beyond blessed to be enough and that the Windrunner could reach Navani. For now, Dalinar had to focus on his current task. He urged his speed to increase, but of course, that did nothing. He had no control over this lesser flight. In it, Dalinar was little more than an arrow propelled through the air by someone else's power, buffeted by the jealous winds which did not want him invading their sky. A part of him acknowledged the puerile nature of these complaints. He was flying, covering 100 miles in less than half an hour. His current travel was a wonder, an incredible achievement. But for a brief time, he'd known something better. At least this particular flight was nearly finished. It was a relatively quick jump from the battlefields of Emel down to the border of Tukar, where Ishar's camp had been spotted. The main bulk of the God Priest's armies had repositioned during the Coalition's campaign, fortifying positions in case the Singers or Dalinar's army tried to advance into Tukar. So, as Dalinar's team reached the coast, they found several depopulated camps marked by large bonfire scars on the stone. The region had been denuded, trees chopped for lumber, hills stripped of anything edible. An army could forage and hunt to stay alive here in the west, where plants grew more readily. In the unclaimed hills, that had never been possible. Sigzil slowed their group of five Windrunners, Dalinar and Zeth, into a hovering position. Beneath them, Ishar's large pavilion remained, and some 100 soldiers stood in a ring in front. These wore similar clothing. Hogshide battle leathers with hardened cuirasses, painted a dark blue closer to black than the Colin shade. Not a true uniform, but in a theme at least. Considering their lack of soulcasters and the prevalence of herdsmen in the area, the equipment made sense. They were armed mostly with spears, though some had steel swords. "They're ready for us, all right," the Azish Windrunner said, steadying Dalinar in the air so he didn't drift away.
"Bright Lord, I don't like this."
"We're all radiant," Dalinar said, "with plenty of gemstones and a bondsmith to renew our spheres. We're as prepared as anyone could be for whatever will happen below." The company lord glanced toward Zeth, who had been ostensibly flown by Sigzil, but had actually used his own stormlight. Dalinar had let Sigzil in on the secret, naturally. He couldn't leave an officer ignorant of his team's capabilities.
"Let me at least send someone else down first," Sigzil said, "to talk, find out what they want."
Dalinar took a deep breath, then nodded. He was impatient, but one did not build good officers by ignoring their legitimate suggestions.
"That would be wise."
Sigzil conferred with his Windrunners, then swooped toward the ground. Apparently, someone else had meant him. Sigzil landed and was met by Ishar himself, who emerged from the pavilion. Dalinar could identify the herald immediately. There was a bond between them, a connection. Sigzil was not attacked by the soldiers in the large ring. Talking to Shalash these last few days, Dalinar thought he had a good picture of the old herald. He had always imagined Ishi as a wise, careful man, thoughtful. Really, Dalinar's image of him had always been similar to that of Noadon, the author of The Way of Kings. Shalash had disabused him of these notions. She presented Ishar as a confident, eager man, energetic, more a battlefield commander than a wise old scholar. He was the man who had discovered how to travel between worlds, leading humans to Roshar in the first place. One word that Shalash had never used was crafty. Ishar was a bold thinker, a man who pulled others after him on seemingly crazed ideas that worked. But he was not a subtle man. Or at least, he hadn't been. Shalash warned that all of them had changed over the millennia, their personal quirks growing more and more pronounced. Dalinar was not surprised that Sigzil was able to speak to the man, then fly back up safely. Ishar did not seem the type to plan an ambush.
"Sir," Sigzil said, floating up beside Dalinar, "I don't think he's altogether sane, despite what Shalash says."
"That was expected," Dalinar said.
"What did he say?"
"He claims to be the Almighty," Sigzil said. "God, born again after being shattered. He says he's waiting for Odium's champion to come and fight him for the end of the world. I think he means you, sir."
Chilling words.
"But he's willing to talk?"
"Yes, sir," Sigzil said. "Though I must warn you, I don't like this entire situation."
"Understood."
take us down. Sigzil gave the orders, and they made their way to the ground and landed in the center of the ring of soldiers. A few windrunners summoned shard blades, the others, not yet of the third ideal, carried spears. They surrounded Dalinar in a circular formation, but he patted Sigzil on the shoulder and made them part. He walked toward Ishar, Zeth shadowing him on one side, Sigzil on the other. Dalinar had not expected the old herald to look so strong. Dalinar was used to the frailty of men like Terebangian, but the person before him was a warrior. Though he was outfitted in robes and wearing an Ardent's beard, his forearms and stance clearly indicated he was accustomed to holding a weapon.
"Champion of Odium,"
Ishar said in a loud, deep voice, speaking Azish.
"It has been a long time."
"I am not Odium's champion," Dalinar said. "I wish to be your ally in facing him, however."
"Your lies cannot fool me. I am Tezim, first man, aspect of the Almighty. I alone prepare for the end of the worlds. I should not have ignored your previous messages to me. I see now what you are, what you must be. Only a servant of my enemy could have captured Urethiru, my holy seat."
"Ishar," Dalinar said softly, "I know what you are."
"I am that man no longer," Ishar said. "I am Herald of Heralds, soul bearer of the Oath Pact. I am more than I once was, and I will become yet more. I shall absorb your power, Odium, and become a god among gods, Edel Nulcium reborn."
Dalinar took a tentative step forward, waving for the others to stay back.
"I spoke to Ash," Dalinar said calmly. "She said to tell you that Taln has returned. He's hurt, and she pleads for your help in restoring him."
"Taln,"
Ishar said. He adopted a far-off look.
"Our sin, bearer of our agonies."
"Jezrian is dead, Ishar," Dalinar said. "Truly dead. You felt it. Ash felt it. He was captured, but his soul faded away after that. Her father, Ishar. She lost her father. She needs your counsel. Taln's madness terrifies her. She needs you."
"I prepared myself for your lies, champion of Odium," Ishar said. "I had not realized they would be so reasonable. Yet you have already done too much to prove who you are. Taking my holy city, summoning your evil storm, sending your minions to torment my people. You have corrupted the Spren to your side so you can have false radiance, but I have discovered your secrets."
He held his hands as if to summon a blade.
"The time for the end is upon us. Let us begin the battle."
A weapon appeared from mist in his hands, a sinuous shard blade lined with glyphs Dalinar did not recognize, though the blade itself was vaguely familiar. Had he seen it before? Zeth hissed loudly.
"That blade," he said, "the Bondsmith honor blade, my father's sword. Where did you get it? What have you done to my father?"
Ishar stepped forward to strike at Dalinar. While some humans left Relaine's band of rebels, returning to their rooms, hoping they hadn't been recognized, most of them stayed. Indeed, the numbers increased as many of the resistors fetched their families. Because Relaine had to let them go fetch families, what else could they do? Leave them to the pursuer, who was known to target the loved ones of people he hunted? All of this ate away at their time. They were also slowed by the need to carry both the wounded and the unconscious Radiance. Relaine did what he could to keep the main group moving, taking them through the breakaway, avoiding the central corridor, where they'd be too easily exposed to heavenly ones from above. However, he found himself attuning despair. They were being watched. That Kremlin that harbored a void spren was following them along the wall. Relaine's band wasn't quite halfway through the market, still a fair distance from the front of the tower, when cracks broke the air, causing gawking market-goers to flee. Stormform lightning strikes, used as a signal to empty the streets. Relaine backed his haggard group against the wall of the large cavern and put their soldiers up front, the heavenly ones flying above. Deepest ones began to emerge from the floor in front of them, and dozens of storm forms approached.
"You're right, listener," Leshwe said, lowering down beside him. "I couldn't have talked us out of this. He knows what we did. Those who approach are humming the rhythm of executions."
"Maybe we should have tried to reach the Crystal Pillar Room," Relaine said, "and escape through the tunnels beneath, as Venli suggested."
"No," Leshwe said. "Those tunnels are blocked. Our best hope was to escape out the front entrance of the tower and perhaps cross the mountains. Unfortunately, judging by those rhythms, those who come aren't being sent by Raboniel. Odium wants me to know.
I will be tortured like the heralds once I return to Braze."
She saluted Relaine.
"So first, we fight."
Relaine nodded, then gripped his spear.
"We fight," he said, then turned to Venli, who had stepped up by his side. "Are there any other spren like the one who bonded you? Would some want other willing singers? Someone like me?"
"Yes," Venli said to Morning, "but I sent them away. The Fused would have seen them, hunted them."
She paused, then her rhythm changed to confusion.
"And Timber says... she says you're spoken for?"
"What?" he said. "By that honor spren who said he'd take me? I turned him down, I..."
The room went dark. Then it shone as crystals grew out from his feet like stained glass windows covering the floor. They showed a figure rising in blue glowing shard plate and a tower coming alight.
"Keep fighting," a voice said in his head. "Salvation will be, listener, bridger of minds. I have been sent to you by my mother, at the request of Renarin, son of Thorns. I have watched you and seen your worthiness. Speak the words and do not despair."
Sigzil blocked Ishar's attack using his shard blade. The other Windrunners swarmed forward to protect Dalinar. Zeth, however, stumbled away. The sight of that honor blade had plainly upset him. The watching Tukari soldiers started to close their circle, but Ishar ordered them back. Then he danced away from Sigzil, shouting at Dalinar.
"Fight me, champion! Face me alone!"
"I brought no weapon, Ishar," Dalinar said. "The time for the contest of champions has not yet come."
Ishar fought brilliantly as the other Windrunners tried to gang up on him. He was a blur with a flashing blade, parrying, dodging, skepping his blade, making it vanish for a brief moment to pass through a weapon trying to block it. The Windrunners had only recently started practicing the technique. Ishar performed the complex move with the grace of long familiarity.
"He is a duelist," Dalinar thought. "Storms, and a good one."
"What did you expect?" the Stormfather rumbled in his mind. "He defended mankind for millennia. The heralds were not all warriors when they began, but all were by the end. Existing for 3,000 years in a state of near-constant war changes men. Among the heralds, Ishar was average in skill."
Ishar faced all 5 Windrunners at once, and it seemed easy for him. He blocked one, then another, stepping away as a third tried to spear him down from above, then swept around with his blade, slicing the heads off 2 non-shard spears. Sigzil's shard blade became a long dueling sword designed for lunges. He struck when Ishar's back was turned, but the herald casually twisted and caught the blade with 1 finger, touching it along the unsharpened side, and guided it past him. Sigzil stumbled as he drew too close, and Ishar lifted that same hand and slammed it against Sigzil's chest, sending him sprawling backward to the stones. Ishar then turned and raised his shard blade in one hand to deflect one of Lin's strikes. Leighton came in, trying to flank, but he looked clumsy compared to the old herald. Fortunately for the five, Ishar merely defended himself. Despite earnestly trying, none could land a blow. It was as if they were trying to hit where Ishar was, while he was able to move in anticipation of where they would be.
"He is average among them?" Delinar asked. "Then who was the best?" "Taln, the one who sits in my camp," Delinar thought, unable to do more than mumble.
"Yes," the Stormfather said. "There was no dispute. But take care, Ishar's skill as a duelist is a lesser danger. He has recovered his honor blade. He is a bondsmith unchained."
Ishar suddenly dashed forward, rushing into one of Sigzil's attacks. The old man ducked the strike, then came up and touched Sigzil on the chest. When Ishar's hand withdrew, he trailed a line of stormlight behind him. He touched his hand to the ground, and Sigzil stumbled, gasping as his glow started to fade. Ishar had apparently tethered Sigzil to the stones with some kind of glowing rope that drained the stormlight out and into the ground. The other four followed, almost faster than Delinar could track. One after another, tethered to the stone. Not bound, not frozen, but their light draining away. And all of them stumbled, slowing, as if their lives were being drained with it. Delinar glanced at Zeth, but the Shin Man had fallen to his knees, wide-eyed. Storms, Delinar should have known better than to depend on the assassin as a bodyguard. Navani had warned him. Zeth was nearly as unstable as the heralds. Delinar didn't want to see what happened when his troops ran out of stormlight. He braced himself and thrust his hands between realms, then slammed them together as closed fists, knuckles meeting. In this, he united the three realms, opening a flash of power that washed away all color and infused the radiance with light. Within the well of light, Delinar was nearly blinded. Figures were mere lines, all shadows banished. Ishar, however, was distinct. Pale, eyes wide, whitened clothing rippling. He dropped his blade and it turned to mist. Transfixed, he stepped toward Delinar.
"How?"
Ishar asked. The word sounded clear, an incongruity against the soundless rush of power surrounding them.
You open honor's path."
"I have bonded the Stormfather," Delinar said. "I need you, Ishar. I don't need the legend, the herald of mysteries. I need the man Ash says you once were, a man willing to risk his life, his work, and his very soul to save mankind."
Ishar strode closer. Holding the portal open was difficult, but Delinar kept his hands pressed together. For the moment, only he and Ishar existed here, in this place painted white. Ishar stopped a step or two from Delinar.
Yes, seeing another bondsmith had shaken him. "I can reach him," Delinar thought.
"I need a teacher," Delinar said. "I don't know my true capabilities. Odium controls your Ethiru, but I think with your help we could restore the radiance there. Please."
"I see," Ishar said softly. He met Delinar's eyes.
"So, the enemy has corrupted the Stormfather too. I had hoped."
He shook his head, then reached out and pressed his hand to Delinar's chest. With the strain of keeping the perpendicularity open, Delinar wasn't able to move away in time. He tried to drop the perpendicularity, but when he pulled his hands apart, it remained open, power roaring through. Ishar touched his hand to his own chest, creating a line of light between him and Delinar.
"I will take this bond to the Stormfather. I will bear it myself. I sense something odd in you, a connection to Odium. He sees you as the one who will fight against him. This cannot be right. I will take that connection as well."
Delinar gasped, falling to his knees as something was torn from him. It felt as if his very soul was being ripped out. The Stormfather screamed, a terrifying, agonized sound like lightning that warped and broke.
"No," Delinar thought, No, please.
A shadow appeared on the field of whiteness. A shape, the shape of a black sword. This single line of darkness swiped through the line connecting Dalinar to Ishar. The white cord exploded and frayed, trailing wisps of darkness. Ishar was cast away, hitting the stone. The perpendicularity remained open, but its light dimmed to reveal Zeth standing between Dalinar and Ishar, brandishing his strange black shard blade. His illusion melted off like paint in the rain, breaking into light, which was sucked into the sword and consumed.
"Where," Zeth said to Ishar, his voice quiet, "did you get that blade you bear?"
The herald seemed not to have heard him. He was staring at Zeth's sword as it dripped black liquid smoke. Around it, the white light of the perpendicularity warped and was consumed, like water down a drain. Zeth spun and stabbed the sword into the heart of the perpendicularity. The Stormfather shouted in anger as the perpendicularity collapsed, folding in upon itself. In a flash, the world was full of color again. All five Windrunners lay on the ground, but they were stirring. Ishar scrambled to his feet before Zeth, who stood with one arm wreathed in black tendrils, gripping the sword that dripped nightmares and bled destruction.
"Answer me," Zeth screamed. "Did you kill the man who held that blade before you?"
"Of course not, foolish man," Ishar said, summoning his blade. "The Shin serve the heralds. They held my sword for me. They returned it when I revealed myself."
Dalinar wiped his brow, pulling himself to his feet. He felt numb, but at the same time, warm, relieved. Whatever the herald had begun, he had not been able to finish.
"Are you all right?" he asked the Stormfather.
"Yes. He tried to steal our bond. It should not be possible, but honor no longer lives to enforce his laws."
"The perpendicularity. Did Zeth destroy it?"
"Don't be foolish," the Stormfather said. "No creation of mortal hands can destroy the power of a shard of Adonalsium. He merely collapsed it. You could summon it again."
Dalinar was not convinced that the thing Zeth bore was a simple creation of mortal hands. But he said nothing as he forced himself to check on the Windrunners, whose connections to the ground had vanished. Leighton had found his feet first and was helping Sigzil, who sat on the ground with a hand to his head.
"I think your worries about this meeting were well advised," Dalinar said, kneeling beside the Azish man. "Can you get us into the air?"
"Damnation," Sigzil whispered. "I feel like I spent last night drinking horny to white."
He burst alight with stormlight, drawing it from the pouch at his belt.
"Storms! The light isn't washing away the pain."
"Yeah,"
Lin said. The other three Windrunners were sitting up.
"My head is pounding like a Parshendi drum, sir, but we should be able to lash."
Dalinar glanced at Zeth, who was alight with stormlight, though it was being drawn at a ferocious rate into his weapon.
"My people," Zeth shouted, "we're not going to return your weapons to you. We kept your secrets, but you lie if you say my father gave you that blade."
"Your father was barely a man when I found him,"
Ishar said.
"The Shin had accepted the unmade, tried to make gods of them. I saved them, and your father did give me this blade. He thanked me for letting him die."
Zeth screamed, charging Ishar, who raised his blade to casually block him, as he had with the Windrunners. However, the meeting of the two blades caused a burst of power, and the shockwave sent both men sprawling backward. Ishar hit hard, dropping his blade, and Dalinar was in position to see the length of the honor blade as it hit and bounced, then came to a rest, half stuck into the ground. There was a chip in its unearthly steel where it had met the black sword. Dalinar, in all his life, had never seen a shard blade marred in such a way, let alone one of the honor blades. Ishar looked up at Zeth, dazed, then grabbed his blade and shouted an order. His soldiers, who had watched all this in silence, broke their circle, moving into a formation. Sigzil put a hand on Dalinar's shoulder, infusing him, preparing to lash him.
"Wait,"
Dalinar said as Ishar stood and slammed his fists together. A perpendicularity opened, as it had before, releasing a powerful explosion of light.
Impossible, the Stormfather said in Dalinar's mind. I didn't feel it happen. How does he do this?
You're the one who warned me he was dangerous, Dalinar thought. Who knows what he's capable of?
Across the stone field, Zeth sheathed his sword just before it began feasting on his soul. Dalinar pointed Leighton that way.
Grab him. Get into the air. We're leaving. Sigzil, lash me.
Right, sir.
Dalinar. Dalinar Kolin.
That was Ishar's voice.
I can see clearly,
the voice said from within the perpendicularity.
I do not know why. Has a bondsmith been sworn? We have a connection, all of us. Nevertheless, I feel my sanity slipping. My mind is broken, and I do not know if it can be healed. Perhaps you can restore me for a short time after an ideal is spoken near me. Everyone sees a little more clearly when a radiant touches the spiritual realm. For now, listen well. I have the answer, a way to fix the problems that beset us. Come to me in Shinovar. I can reset the Oath Pact, though I must be sane to do it. I must have help, too.
The voice stumbled as if warping.
To defeat you, champion of Odium. We will clash again, and I am ready for your wiles this time. You will not defeat me when next we meet, though you bear a corrupted honor blade that bleeds black smoke. I am almighty!
Dalinar lurched, rising into the air as the lashing took effect. The Windrunners darted up after him, including Leighton, who grabbed Zeth. As they left the column of light, Dalinar could see Ishar's soldiers stepping into the perpendicularity. A short time later, it vanished. The Herald, his men, and the Honor Blade were gone, transported into Shadesmar.
Together, Navani and the sibling could create light. Light that drove the monster Moash back along the corridor, holding his arm before his eyes. Light that drove the knife from Navani's side as it healed her wound. Light that brought Fabrials to life. Light that sang with the tones of honor and cultivation in tandem. But her spren, the sibling, was so weak. Navani grasped the pillar, pouring her power into it. But there was so much chaos muddying the system, like creme in a cistern of pure water, the void light Raboniel had injected. Navani couldn't destroy it, but maybe she could vent it somehow. She saw the tower now as an entity, with lines of garnet very like veins and arteries, and she inhabited that entity. It became her body. She saw thousands of closed doors the scouts had missed in mapping the tower. She saw brilliant mechanisms for controlling pressure, heat. No, stay focused. I think we need to vent the void light, Navani said to the sibling.
Aye,
the sibling said.
How?
I can sing the proper tone, Navani said. We fill the system with as much tower light as will fit. Then we stop and vibrate these systems here, here, and here with the anti-void light tone.
I suppose, the sibling said. But how can we create the vibration?
There's a plate on Raboniel's desk. I'll have my scholars play that. I'll need a model to sing it, but with that I should be able to transfer the vibration through the system. That should force the enemy's corruption out through these broken gemstones in the pump mechanism. What do you think?
Yes, the sibling said softly. I think, yes, that might work.
With that done, we'll need to restart the tower's protections, Navani said. These are complex fabrials, made of the essence of spren.
Of your essence? Yes, the sibling said, their voice growing stronger. But they are complicated and took many years of... Pressure Fabriel here, Navani said, inspecting it with her mind. Ah, I see. A network of attractors to bring in air and create a bubble of pressure. Quite ingenious. Yes. And the heating, Fabriels. Not important now, but you've made housings for them out of metals. You manifested physically as metal and crystal, like shard blades manifest from smaller spren. Yes! As she began working, Navani noticed an oddity. What was that, moving through the tower? High Marshal Kaladin? Flying quickly, his powers restored, wrapped in spren as armor. He had achieved his fourth ideal, and he was going in the wrong direction. She could easily see his mistake. He'd decided the best way to protect the tower was to come here, to the pillar, and rescue Navani. But no, he was needed elsewhere. She drew his attention with flashing lights on the wall. Sibling? Kaladin's voice soon sounded through the system as he touched the crystal vein. Yes and no, High Marshal, Navani said. The pillar is secure. Get to the breakaway market. Tell the enemies you find there that they'd best retreat quickly. He obeyed immediately, changing the direction of his flight. Navani, full of incredible awareness, got to work.
Dalinar persuaded the Windrunners to linger in the sky above Ishar's camp rather than flying immediately back to the Amuli war camp. He worried about them, though. The Radiants drooped like soldiers who had completed a full-day double-time march. Ordinarily, Stormlight would have perked them up, but they complained of headaches their powers couldn't heal.
The effects shouldn't be permanent, the Stormfather said, but I cannot say for certain. Ishar connected them to the ground. Essentially, their powers saw the stones as part of their body, and so tried to fill the ground with Stormlight as it fills their veins. I can barely make sense of what you said, Dalinar replied, hanging in the sky far above Ishar's camp. How are such things possible?
The powers of a bondsmith are the powers of creation, the Stormfather said. The powers of gods, including the ability to link souls. Always before, honor was here to guard this power, to limit it. It seems that Ishar knows how to make full use of his new freedom.
The Stormfather paused, then rumbled more softly.
I never liked him, though I was only a wind then, and not completely conscious. I remember him. Ishar was ambitious even before madness took him. He cannot bear sole blame for the destruction of Ashen, humankind's first home. But he was the one Odium first tricked into experimenting with the surges.
You don't particularly like anyone, Dalinar noted.
Not true. There was a human who made me laugh once, long ago. I was somewhat fond of him.
It felt like a rare attempt at levity. Dared Dalinar hope it was progress in the ancient spren? Below, Ishar's large pavilion waited, flapping in the gentle wind. Dalinar had seen no sign of servants or soldiers peeking out.
Sir, Sigsel said, floating over to Dalinar, my troops need to rest.
A few minutes longer, Dalinar said, narrowing his eyes.
What are we waiting for, sir?
To see if Ishar returns. He fled to Shadesmar. He could return at any moment. If he does, we're leaving at speed. But if he doesn't...
Ishar hadn't been expecting to run. Zeth and that strange blade had driven him away.
This could be a rare opportunity, Company Lord. He was a scholar among heralds. He might have written notes that give hints to applications of bondsmith powers.
Understood, sir, Sigsel said.
Dalinar glanced toward Zeth, who floated on his own away from the others, lashed into the sky by his own power. Dalinar nodded toward him, and Sigsel, Catching the meaning gave Dalinar a brief lashing that sent him over beside the assassin. Zeth was muttering to himself.
How did he know? How did the old fool know?
Know what? Dalinar said as he drifted near Zeth. Ishar? How did he know about your people? Zeth blinked, then focused on Dalinar. It was odd to see him looking like himself with that too pale skin and those wide eyes. Dalinar had grown accustomed to his Alethi illusions.
I must begin preparing myself, Zeth said. My next ideal is my quest, my pilgrimage. I must return to my people, Blackthorn. I must face them.
As you wish, Dalinar said. He wasn't certain he wanted to unleash this man upon anyone, least of all the one neutral kingdom of note in this conflict. But Jasnah had indicated it would happen, and besides, he doubted he could stop Zeth from doing anything he truly wanted to.
Your people, they have all of the honor blades?
All but three, Zeth said. The blade of the Windrunners was mine for years. The blade of the Skybreakers was reclaimed by Nin long ago. And of course the blade of the Stonewards was never ours to protect. So there were seven. But if Ishar has his blade...
You don't need those other swords,
a perky voice said in Dalinar's mind.
I am as good as 10 swords. Did you see how great I was?
I saw, Dalinar said to the sword. You chipped a shard blade, an honor blade.
I did? Wow! I am a great sword. We destroyed a lot of evil, right?
You promised not to speak into the minds of others, Sword Nimi, Zeth said softly. Do you not remember?
I remember. I just forgot.
I will send a team with you to Shinovar, Dalinar said, as soon as we return to our camp.
No, Zeth said. No. I must go alone, but not yet. I must prepare. I have something important to do. He knew. He should not have known.
Storms. Dalinar wasn't certain who was more insane, Zeth or the sword. The combination was particularly unnerving.
Without them, you would be dead, the Stormfather said, and I'd be bonded against my will. This Shin Man is dangerous, but I fear Ishar more.
Sigzil, Dalinar called. I don't think he's going to return anytime soon. Take us down. Let's see if he left anything of value in that tent. Aiden raised the spear he'd found in the atrium. People were crying, surrounded by Fearspren, as the group of beleaguered humans and singers together made a circle around their wounded. They pushed the elderly and the children to the center, but Aiden didn't go with those. The Spren watching would see that he wasn't the type to hide. Even women had picked up weapons, including the surgeon's wife, who had given her son to one of the young girls at the center to hold. War was a masculine art, but when you started attacking women, you'd stopped engaging in war. You deserved anything that happened to you after that point. Aiden's father was among the wounded. Alive, bless the heralds, but bleeding badly. He'd fought for the Radiance when Aiden had hidden in the hallway. Storm him, he wasn't going to be a coward again. He wasn't. Aiden fell into line beside a fearsome parchman in incredible carapace armor, then tried to position himself with his spear out in that parchman's same posture. The storm forms marched in, singing a terrible song. Aiden found himself trembling, his hands slick on his spear.
Oh, storms!
In that moment, he didn't want to earn a spren. He didn't want to fight. He wanted to be home making plates, listening to his father hum. He didn't want to be standing here, knowing that they were all going to... A hand took Aiden by the shoulder and moved him backward. Not all the way back, but enough for the figure to stand in front of him. It was the quiet bridgeman, Dabid. Aiden didn't complain, not after seeing those storm forms. Felt good to have someone in front of him, though the bridge man's spear shook. He was acting afraid to fool the enemy, right? The storm forms didn't release lightning, which was good. The others had thought they might not because of the marketplace. Their powers were too wild. Regardless, there seemed to be hundreds of them. A call came from somewhere behind, and they came charging in, rippling with red lightning that flashed when they touched something. In seconds, everything was chaos. Aiden screamed, squeezing his eyes shut, holding out his spear and shaking. No, he had to fight. He had to. Something knocked into him from behind, throwing him forward. The strike dazed him, and he lost his spear. When he rolled over, a Voidbringer with red eyes stood above him. The creature casually speared downward. Aiden didn't even have time to scream before clink. Clink? The Stormform cocked his head, humming an odd song. He stabbed at Aiden's chest, but the spear stopped short again. Aiden looked at his body as he lay prone on the floor. His torso was surrounded by glittering blue armor. He raised his hands and found them covered in gauntlets. He was in shardplate. He was in shardplate! Ha! He shouted and kicked at the storm form. The creature went flying, soaring 20 feet and slamming into a wall. Aiden had barely felt any resistance. It was like he'd always imagined. The shardplate vanished off him and turned into a group of windspren, which soared over to Dabbed, who was about to take an axe to the head. Clink! Both combatants, the human now shrouded in shardplate and the enemy who had hit him, froze in place, stunned. The enemy backed away and the plate flew off again, this time surrounding the lead heavenly one. She'd been spearing at a storm form who released a flash of lightning that enveloped her. When Aiden's eyes cleared, he saw her floating in shardplate, staring at her hands in obvious wonder. Confused, the storm forms began calling out, disengaging and reforming into ranks. The armor burst apart, forming those strange windspren who flew into the air overhead before latching onto a figure hovering above the buildings. The plate had fit everyone, but him it matched. A brilliant knight radiant in glowing armor holding aloft an intricate shard spear. He left the helmet off so they could all see. Kaladin Stormblessed, bright as the sun.
"I bring word from the sibling," he shouted. "They don't remember inviting you in. And considering that they aren't merely the master of this house, they literally are this house, your actions are quite the insult."
Brilliant lights suddenly began running up the walls, making the very core of the stones glow as if molten in the center. Similar lights burst to life in the ceiling. The ground trembled as if the entire mountain were shaking. Clanking sounds rang in the hallways like distant machines, and wind began to blow in the vast chamber, which now was as bright as day. Most amazing, the lightning on the storm forms went out. Deepest ones who had been clawing out of the ground and grabbing at the feet of soldiers began screaming and going limp, trapped in the stone. The heavenly ones who had been helping dropped to the ground suddenly, then collapsed, unconscious. Groans sounded from behind. The radiance on the floor at the center of the circle began stirring. They were awake.
"You may turn in your weapons," Stormblessed said to the enemy, "and return to your kind unharmed, so long as you promise me one thing."
He smiled.
"Tell him that I'm particularly going to enjoy hearing what he looked like when he found out what happened here today."
A strange, unpleasant stench struck Delinar as he stepped into Ishar's pavilion. The odor was chemically harsh, and he felt a faint burning in his eyes. He blinked in the dim light, finding a large chamber filled with slabbed tables and sheets shrouding something atop them. Bodies? The Windrunners had gone in first, of course, but they were busy inspecting the recesses of the tent to check for an ambush. Dalinar walked up to one of the slabs and yanked off the shroud. He simply found a body underneath, an incision in its abdomen made with clean surgical precision. Male, with the clothing cut off and lying beside the body. Very pale skin and stark white hair, In death, the hair and skin seemed almost the same color. That skin had a blue cast to it, probably a Natan person. So Ishar was a butcher, a mad surgeon as well as a crazed theocrat. For some reason, that relieved Dalinar. It was disgusting, but this was an ordinary kind of evil. He'd expected something worse.
Sir? Mella, the Windrunner, called from across the room. You should see this.
Dalinar walked over to Mella, who stood beside one of the other slabs. Zeth remained in the doorway to the pavilion, seated on the ground, holding his sheathed sword across his lap. He seemed not to care about the investigation. Another corpse, half revealed by a drawn-back sheet, was on the slab in front of Mella, though this one was far stranger. The elongated body had a black shell covering most of it, from neck to feet. That had been cut free to open up the chest. Dalinar couldn't make sense of the shell. It looked like clothing, kind of, but was hard like Singer carapace, and had apparently been attached to the skin. The head was a soggy mass of black flesh, soft like intestines, with no visible eyes or features. What on Roshar?